Qantas changes its mind.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Yesterday, we told you Australia's Qantas turned down two private equity firms that wanted to buy the airline. Well, that was yesterday. Today, Qantas accepted a bid that was sweetened a little bit. Mark Pilling of Airline Business Magazine believes this could spark a wave of airline mergers over the next 6 months.
The airline industry has been, you know, crying out for freedom to consolidate for years, and it's often prevented by government and national ownership restrictions. So this is not a case of the airline industry sort of being behind the demand curve, because it wants to consolidate.
The $8.6 billion Qantas deal is one of the biggest corporate takeovers in Australian history. Today, that U.S. trade delegation led by the Treasury Secretary started talking with Chinese leaders in Beijing. Henry Paulson urged China to come up with tangible results on its currency and other economic sticking points with the U.S. Ruth Kirshner reports from Beijing.
If Secretary Paulson wants tangible results from this economic dialogue, Chinese Vice Premier Wu Yi does not want a lecture from the U.S. delegation. China's most powerful woman said some Americans fail to understand how Beijing is making headway on economic reform. She also pointed out that China is increasing imports to offset the trade surplus with the U.S. But China expert David Zweig of Hong Kong University says any concrete steps on Washington's main concern, the currency, are very unlikely.
It would be very difficult for the Chinese leadership to be seen to be giving in to American pressure. They're going to do it at their own pace when they feel it's appropriate for their economy.
The U.S. delegation will have an audience with President Hu Jintao and Premier Wen Jiabao on Friday. In Beijing, I'm Ruth Kirshner for Marketplace.
The people who control more than a third of the oil in this world are meeting right now in Nigeria. OPEC's considering a second cut in production to follow the one about a month ago. But the countries that buy OPEC's oil want the cartel to hold off on that. Winter's coming, and that's when everybody uses more oil. Elisa Roth looks at the prospect for those heating bills.
Back in July, crude oil was trading at record high prices, $78 a barrel. So by that count, this prediction from Deutsche Bank's Adam Siminski seems like a downright bargain.
Markets in the $60 to $65 range for crude oil, and natural gas prices probably somewhere near $7.50 to $8 over the course of the winter.
Prices are still high enough to leave homeowners hoping for a mild winter. But Siminski says you can pretty much forget about prices even getting close to, say, the 20-something dollars a barrel they were back in the 1990s.
It would take a really very serious global recession to reduce demand enough to force prices down to that kind of level.
Siminski says OPEC's last production cut is already helping balance out supply and demand. He says that'll help keep the market stable for now. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
In the end, stocks barely moved yesterday. The Dow gained a couple points to 12,317. The NASDAQ was up less than a point. The S&P 500 put on a point and a half. This is Marketplace. Health officials say they think lettuce caused an E. coli outbreak at a few Taco Bells. Amy Scott looks at Taco Bell's damage control.
Officials have linked Taco Bell's in just four eastern states to the outbreak, but judging from the jokes on late-night TV, the company's PR problem is national.
I believe his last words were, maybe I'll have just one more chalupa.
Competitor Taco John's is also feeling the heat after customers in Iowa and Minnesota fell sick. Crisis communications consultant Robbie Vorhaus recommends both chains be straight with their customers.
Once somebody understands that what has happened to you is not your fault, that you're doing everything you can to fix it, people are willing to forgive you.
Decades ago, such a campaign helped Johnson & Johnson recover after several customers died taking cyanide-laced Tylenol. But then it's hard to be honest when you don't have all the facts. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Which comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, committed to providing financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Let's thrive. Thrivent.com. By Reuters, the world's news and information source, working to make a difference every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. When the Democrats take control of Congress next month, right off the bat, they plan to give the country's lowest paid workers a raise. The federal minimum wage hasn't budged in a decade. It's still $5.15 an hour. But what has changed is the old consensus among economists about the minimum wage. Chris Farrell, how does that go?
The big economist complaint about the minimum wage is, yes, you know, okay, you have good intentions to help the most vulnerable citizens in our society, but it doesn't work. It actually hurts the most vulnerable citizens in our society because when you raise the minimum wage, employers stop hiring these least skilled workers. So that has been the traditional complaint by mainstream economists about raising the minimum wage. Good heart, bad policy.
But now some economists have a change of heart, I understand.
They have a genuine change of heart. And what it is that a number of economists starting in the 1990s, particularly David Card and Alan Krueger, Princeton University, they started doing these studies looking at the impact of the minimum wage. And what they found is that it has a very small impact on employment. It may not have any impact on employment. And now there was a recent survey of economists about things that they agree on. And if you look at, like, free trade's a good thing, all right? Most economists say, yes, free trade's a good thing. The one that they disagreed on, almost divided down the middle, is the minimum wage. And so now what you have is a true, genuine disagreement among economists, which is actually in parts of it quite vituperative, about the impact of the minimum wage and whether or not it should be raised.
So things have been getting kind of nasty about this?
Well, it has been nasty in parts, although recently I follow the economic blogs. The virtual ink that has been spilled over the minimum wage, it's fascinating. And what I take away from it is that you can't make a hard-edged ideological statement. You cannot say, raise the minimum wage, you hurt the most vulnerable workers.
Well, can you make the case that raising the minimum wage does have an impact on the lives of low-wage workers?
If you talk to all these economists and all this division about the minimum wage, you can get them to agree on this. They don't think raising the minimum wage is a good way to attack poverty, is a good way to narrow inequality. They much prefer the earned income tax credit. But what I think we can now say is if you raise the minimum wage, particularly what's being proposed, it's going to help out most of your low-skill workers. They're at least the paycheck that they're going to get, you know, have a little bit of purchasing power against inflation, which has really eroded the value of their paycheck.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Chris Farrell is the Marketplace Economics Correspondent. Your thoughts are always welcome. Log on to our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
Every time you go into one of those stars,